help her. But only be fair, really. Besides, what if it worked, and she would see that I meant every damn word I said to her? What if this is my one chance to prove to her I'll hold the wall?
36. Cures for the Commoner's Heartache. Tessa.
Oh, honey, I've never seen you this bad before. Nikki stands over me with a blend of disgust and sympathy on her face. I am lying in the exact same spot I've been for a full day now. I reach under the coffee table and hold up the notice of civil litigation and an eviction notice signed by Charles Porter for non-payment of landscaping bills, plus disrupting the peace of my fellow residents. Nikki takes them and sighs. Oh, no. I have to move home with my parents. My parents, Nikki! I'm going to lose everything. I can't afford to pay for a lawyer. I sit up and scratch my head, which makes me cringe. Ouch, my hair hurts. Yeah, it looks a little crusty. I may or may not have spilled runny ice cream down the side of my head. How? Never mind. She opens her mouth, then closes it again. Nope. I'm totally screwed. Come on, Nikki takes me by the hand. Let's go, lady. You're going to shower, then we're going to figure out what you're going to do about all of this. 1 hour, 3 shampoos, and 2 cups of strong coffee later, I'm sitting at the table eating a bowl of cheesy macaroni Nikki whipped up. She's on the phone with her dad, who is a retired barrister. My stomach tightens as I listen to her saying a whole lot of uh-huhs and okays and is there any other way around it? When she gets off the phone, she looks at me. He doesn't think they have a case, but he said the worst thing you could have done is ignore it. You need to get someone to respond quickly, someone with a lot of experience in this type of thing. He said to tell you to hang in there and that he'll make a few calls to see if he can find someone to help you out. Oh, and they want you to come around for dinner soon. Thanks. That's very kind of them. But maybe call him back and tell him not to bother calling around. I can't hire anyone anyway. I have a sip of tea and stare out the window at the palace in the distance. I feel a jab in my stomach and turn back to Nikki. My brain can only focus on something other than Arthur for about 1 minute at a time, which is utterly pathetic. He'd think that given the fact I'm about to be broke and homeless, I forget all about his royal liar pants. But I can't. Have you heard from him? I shake my head. He's been too busy parading around town, literally, and having an absolutely wonderful time without me, while I've been lying stuck to the couch with ice cream in my hair. My voice rises with every word until I'm practically shouting. I slump down in my chair and tears stream down my cheeks. I let myself get caught up believing it was something it wasn't, but the whole time he was just using me. I've been a fool, Nikki. I fell in love with the wrong guy, again. But it's the last time. I'm done. Done with men for good. That's it. I surrender. I'm just gonna grow old alone and wait for the chin hairs to start coming in. Other than the chin hairs, you might be onto something there, because men clearly don't work out for you. I gasp, but she keeps talking before I can launch into an indignant rant. Now, I know you've just had your heart stomped on and handed to you, but you have to get your ass back to work. This is the exact time you should be capitalizing on everything, but you're not. And I'd hate to think you went through all of this for nothing. Me too. I turn back to her and my eyes fill up again. Nikki slides a tissue box to me and sits back in her chair. It's time to get it together, because you need to face your life, like yesterday. I know. I will. My voice lacks any hint of enthusiasm, even though I know she's right. I'm starting over. Again. And this time, I'm going to do things right. Face problems head on. Be honest and use integrity as my guide. Unfortunately, I have to start with my final post about the royal family. I'll have to set aside my anger and pain and do my best to be objective for the first time since I started writing about them. It's going to hurt like hell. But I know when it's over, I'll have the satisfaction of knowing I did the right thing. Plus, I have another carton of Chocoloco ice cream in the freezer. Blog post, May 12th. Tessa here. This will be my last post as the Royal Watchdog. I have spent the last few days reflecting on my time at the palace and on my previously held beliefs and notions about the royal family. I must admit publicly that my earlier posts were based in large part on educated guesses as to what the royals were doing and why. This is extremely difficult for me to admit, but I must, because it is the right thing to do. In my defense, had the royal family been more forthcoming with their financial records, their values, beliefs, and duties all along, none of us would have had to guess. But if their only crime is to have been private about such matters, this is not a good enough reason to oppose them. I stand by my belief that a nation's people should elect their leaders, but otherwise I am no longer adamant that the royal family takes more than they give. The financial burden that they place on the taxpayer is far less than the money that they bring in through tourism and charity work. I've spent time with dozens of recipients of the family's patronage, and I must say their lives have all been made better by the kindness and care they've received by Princess Arabella, Prince Arthur, and the Princess Dowager Florence. I've shared some of their stories on the blog recently, and it has been a truly touching experience to witness, and it would be a great loss to many should the vote go against them. More than that, we must pause to give thought to the fact that Avonia is a kingdom. It has been a kingdom for 800 years now, and there is something a little bit magical about that. Perhaps there is something to be said for magic to delight us, and tradition to join us to our past in our busy, critical modern world. Perhaps they serve as an important reminder of simpler times, and how we all just need to slow down a little bit and not let constant progress get in the way of having a rich life, whether you're in a small flat on Church Street or you're in a palace. I had some tough questions for the royal family to answer when this whole thing started. I wanted to hold their regal feet to the fire, to force them to be accountable for their mistakes. But the truth is, no one was holding me accountable for mine. Did King Winston betray the people by dodging his taxes? Absolutely. Should he be held accountable for that? Yes, definitely. He has been made to pay back the money with a large fine, which is by law what would be required of anyone in this situation. Were his actions unforgivable? You'll be surprised to find that I don't believe that is for me to say. You see, over the past few weeks, I've been thinking about my work as the Royal Watchdog and what I bring to the world through it. And I've discovered that although entertaining, and I hope, thought-provoking, I'm not sure that there is value in someone spouting their hate-filled opinions into the world. In fact, I'm sure there is very little value in it. The world is filled with enough anger and judgment without someone like me making a lot of assumptions and presenting them as facts. I set out to be a respected journalist and have missed the mark in a way that is nothing short of outstanding. There is no room for passion in journalism, unless it is a passion for presenting the truth, accurately, honestly, and unbiased. Now I know that the Royal Watchdog has never been an unbiased news source, but I can see that I'm not doing what makes me a better person. Recently, my 10-year-old niece Tabitha asked me why it was okay for me to say such mean things about the royal family, when she's always been told to be kind to others. I had no answer. So my new rule in life is going to be, if I can't explain it to my niece, I shouldn't be doing it. Well, maybe not in every way. I mean, there are some grown-up things I'd like to be doing that she doesn't need to know about, but otherwise, the rule works. For those of you who will be going to the polls, and I hope it will be every eligible citizen of Avonia, because this is a vital referendum and one that cannot be undone, I would like to share some of my observations about Prince Arthur, with whom I spent the most of my time. He may act like nothing could ever faze him, but in truth he spends much of his time worrying about doing the right thing, about the people he can't help,
about whether he's done enough. And now he's worrying about turning over our nation to Jack Jansen, a man who accepted his family's friendship when presented in good faith, but then turned on them as soon as the opportunity presented itself. We must ask ourselves why the Prime Minister would do that. Why does he need sole power over our country? Why should we trust a man who betrayed the very people who helped him in his climb to power? I know it is the very definition of patriarchal to have a leader decide he knows best for our country, but Prince Arthur doesn't see it that way. He sees it as his responsibility to hold the wall, as he put it. And to be completely honest, there's some comfort in having someone at the top who will care for and protect us all. And please don't accuse me of being anti-feminist, because Prince Arthur could easily have a daughter and raise her to do the same. To be honest, I'm not sure which way I will vote, which is as shocking to me as it is to many of you. What I do know is that whatever decision is made, I think at the end of the day, we're all seeking the same thing. A fair, just, kinder world. One in which we don't feel judged or looked down on by others. And the only way to create that is to stop judging each other. At the end of the day, the royal family are just people with hopes and dreams and pains and flaws like the rest of us. They wake up each morning and do their best to get through the day. They need to sort out whether to do the right thing or the smart thing when the choices aren't the same. Unlike us, they live a life of privilege that few can imagine, but this life comes with pressures and hardships that we can't fully understand either. They have more critics than the rest of us. But as of today, they have one less. So, to the royal family, I apologize for my previous judgments and criticisms. For Prince Arthur and Princess Dowager Florence especially, I thank you for welcoming me into your lives and showing me who you really are. It has been an honor, one of which I am not worthy, but will strive to be. When I finished the first draft, I spent an hour eating ice cream while tweaking the post before I hit post. My heart pounds as I wait for my confession to be uploaded for all the world to see. Part of me, the pathetic, lovesick part, hopes Arthur will read it and come rushing to me with his upper body poking out the sunroof of his limo, like Richard Gere in Pretty Woman. But that will never happen. This isn't some Hollywood movie, and I'm not some beautiful prostitute who can give a billionaire a new lease on life. He's never going to marry someone like me. He's going to marry Lady Dr. Brooke Bedingfield or someone else equally impressive and with the proper lineage. Not some failed reporter whose father is a mechanic and whose mother collects royal mugs for a hobby. I was just someone willing to give him what he wants. And now he has it. I abandon the spoon and sip the Chocoloco straight from the carton. Dignity? When has that ever mattered? My thoughts turn to the serious backlash I'm about to face from my faithful fellow royal haters, but I don't even care. The only thing that matters is having this whole thing over with, so I can move on and forget I've ever heard of Arthur Winston Philip George Charles Edward Langdon. Text from Noah. Nina wanted me to say she loved your post, and she's glad you finally come around from the dark side. She wants to invite you to her monthly book club. Hint, say no, they're an awful bunch. Voicemail from Mum. Tessa, it's Mum. Finn was by earlier and showed me your blog post. Well done, sweetie. I always knew you'd come around and become a fan of our royal family again. Also, I'm surprised what a talented writer you are. Maybe that's your medium more than being on screen, which tends not to work out for you. Are you coming by on Sun? Beep! Text from Bram. I take it you slept with him. Dumbass. If you need a job, I'll be hiring a new receptionist about 3 dates from now. Facebook message from Kingslayer99. I'm not sure I've ever felt so disappointed in another human being in my entire life. You've betrayed us all. I hope it was worth it, Tessa. Don't bother writing back, as I'm blocking you as soon as I hit send. BTW,
I was just being nice this whole time. You're not smart or talented or beautiful. You've always been a loser, and you always will be.
37. I was mistaken. This is rock bottom. Tessa. I thought I had bottomed out the day after the ball, but that was only about 3/4 of the way down. It took another 3 weeks for me to really find the actual bottom. And let me tell you, it's dark down here. I've been living with my parents for exactly 12 days, 16 hours and 42 minutes, and there is no end in sight to this current arrangement. I could do my own version of that Sinead O'Connor song, except in it nothing would compare to my apartment. Once I paid off the landscaping fees and paid a $5,000 retainer to one of Nikki's dad's lawyer's friends, a woman named Nancy Reagan, no relation to the former American president's wife, and whatever you do, do not bring that up unless you want to see her right eye start to twitch. And my income was cut by 2/3 by shutting down the Royal Watchdog blog. I am officially broke. Oh, and I almost forgot. I lost my damage deposit because the wallpaper Nikki put up in the bathroom needed to be replaced. Nikki will pay me back for that at the end of the month. My parents claim to be thrilled to have me home, but there are moments it's obvious I'm intruding on their privacy. I had no idea they had such an active sex life, and maybe they didn't when they had 5 children living here, but since we moved, they haven't become empty nesters as much as love nesters. Yuck. The other evening, I came home from seeing a movie with Nikki, and when I walked into the TV room, it was clear they were up to something based on the guilty looks on their faces, and the fact that my father had a pillow across his lap. Also, my mum's blouse buttons were wildly mismatched, leaving a gaping hole where her bra should have been. So now, I've seen the future of my chest, and I can tell you it's not a pretty sight. Since then, I've taken to phoning ahead when I'm on my way home, and calling loudly when I'm coming down the stairs, or up the stairs, or in from the garden, or out to the garden. Really, now I'm just yelling wherever I go around here to avoid seeing that again. The living arrangements themselves are less than pleasing. I'm not even in my old room. I'm in Finn's because my old room is now a scrapbooker's paradise, since it had the best light of any of the upstairs bedrooms. Finn's room is a dark, dreary, tiny place that reminds me of the very back of a cave. I can tell Chester hates it in here, and I don't blame him. It smells of sports equipment and weed, even though I scrubbed it top to bottom before I moved in. But who am I to complain? At least I have a roof over my head while I sort out my mess of a life. Almost all of my things have either been sold or are boxed up in a shed in the back garden, where I'm sure spiders are nesting at this very moment, since I'm sure this is what they do on Thursday mornings in June. They nest and lay eggs in your things while you lie in bed depressed, trying to force yourself to get up and get your ass moving again. I stay perfectly still with my eyes wide open, listening for signs of life downstairs. Why is it one must open their eyes very wide in order to hear better? I should Google that. Maybe I could start a site with all the answers to random questions like that. Oh, wait. That's Google, isn't it? Anyway, it's very quiet, which means that Dad must be at work and Mum must be out. All this shagging. Ew. I throw off the covers and make my way down the hall, calling, "Who's up for some coffee? Anyone? Good morning!" I get no reply. Ah. Silence. There's a note on the kitchen table from Mum. "Tessa, I've gone for my bridge game. Please clean up any crumbs after you make your breakfast, not like the other day when you ate half a loaf of bread with honey. When I get back, let's chat about your career. Grace next door said that her niece is making a fortune selling something called Arbonne. You're definitely prettier than her, and if you learned how to properly apply makeup, you could be a real success. Lars called earlier to tell you not to look at your royal website. Apparently, the comments have gotten worse, not better. Is there some way someone could delete them? Maybe Nikki would know how. I asked Lars to do it, but he said he would need your passcode, and he's also far too busy. Anyway, I'll be back in time for lunch so we can sort out your future then. Love, Mum. P.S. Please take the beef roast out of the freezer and scrub the potatoes on the counter if I'm not back by 3. Noah and the family are coming for dinner. Won't that be nice?
No, it will not be nice. Worse than losing my flat, my money, and having to find a decent job is the fact that my brothers know I'm homeless, jobless, and broke. And let me tell you, it really only took them about 5 minutes between them to figure out I was embellishing my previous earnings. So no, Mum, having Noah over for dinner tonight does not sound very bloody nice. I make 4 slices of honey toast, heavy on the honey, and take it to the TV room, where I turn on the television, only to see Veronica Platt smiling back at me. My squished face is behind her, and across the bottom of the screen read the words, "Lawsuit dropped." What? I jump up from the couch, letting toast fly on my lap, then stand motionless, listening to Veronica's smooth voice telling me about my lawsuit. Why does she always manage to scoop me? Well, Bits, the makers of the Shock Jogger, have dropped their suit against Tessa Sharp. On their website, it states that a deal has been struck on Ms. Sharp's behalf, but that they are not able to provide details at this time. I grab the phone and dial my lawyer's office, where I reach her assistant, Rebecca, who puts me right through to Nancy Reagan. Tessa, what happened? You haven't been brokering a deal behind my back, have you? She sounds pissed, even though as far as I know she's done basically nothing to earn my $5,000 so far. I don't have the first clue what happened. I thought you would know. Very odd. I saw the news earlier and had Rebecca call the court clerk's office right when they opened. They confirmed that the suit has indeed been dropped, and that some sort of settlement has been reached on behalf of the defendant, who is you. I roll my eyes. Nancy Reagan seems to think I know nothing about the law, when in actual fact, I was a crime reporter for over a month. Plus, I used to watch Is It Legal every week with my granddad when I was a girl, thank you very much. Well, that's amazing news, isn't it? I mean, we don't have to go to court or anything. Yes, of course. You should go out and celebrate our victory. Our victory? Really? Since the case was settled independently of your office, I'm wondering if I could perhaps have my retainer back? I've recently hit some hard times, and that money would make a huge... Oh, that's not really how a retainer works. You pay to book my time, which means it was set aside for you, and therefore cannot be billed to someone else. Even though it is time in the future because you haven't actually started to work on my case yet. What if you find another client to fill that time? Then they'll be paying for time further into the future than the time you paid for. She's speaking to me now like I'm a 4-year-old who doesn't know how to poo on the toilet yet. No, but it would be the same days you were going to spend on my case. Instead, they're now freed up for someone else. But those days are already gone, Nancy says. Those days haven't happened yet, but they will happen, and when they do, they'll be gone. Yes, I understand how time works. I don't think you do. Not legal time, anyway, but don't feel bad. Few people do. Now, you make sure you celebrate. Maybe go for a nice dinner with friends, or pop over to London to see a play or something. I can't. Why not? Because you have all my savings. Well, if you didn't have any money, you shouldn't have gotten sued in the first place. I have to run now. I have clients waiting. Click. It takes me about 10 minutes before I calm down enough to call Nikki so I can rant about what just happened. She's at the salon and has to step outside so she can hear me over the thumping beat of the dance music. I go through the entire story, even though she told me she's got a woman with highlights that are almost through processing. When we finish deciding that Nancy Reagan is a level one bitch, the lawyer, not the former first lady, we move on to the topic of who is behind the settlement. Hang on. I hear the thumping music and she shouts, "Tina, can you rinse out Mrs. McTaggart's hair, please?" Pause. Thump, thump, thump. "No, I'm afraid this can't wait. Can you just be a team player, Tina? Just this once?" The music grows faint again. "There, I'm all yours. It's got to be Arthur. No one else could pull this off." "No, can't be him. There must be some other reason. No, there isn't. It's 100% him. No one else we know has that kind of money. Or connections. Yes, but he would never do this for me. Remember all the lying and the using? He's not one of the good ones. My tone is dangerously close to sounding like Nancy Reagan talking to me. When did you get so skeptical? Oh, I don't know. Maybe when Tommy the Wanker stole all my money? Or maybe it was right around the time that giant asshole Barrett dumped me and announced he was getting married to Helena Jones. I really can't say for sure. My voice drips with sarcasm. Fair enough. You may have a point there, but seriously, Tessa, you may have to allow for the possibility that he isn't as bad as he seems. Maybe Prince Arthur wanted to do something nice for you after he read your post. Doubt it. But who do you think paid them out? Your fairy godmother? I don't know, but it's not him. I go for a long run, which is my form of celebrating my victory. I'm hoping that with each mile I'll come closer to figuring out who came to my rescue. I can't let myself imagine that it was Arthur, because letting myself hope that he did it will only lead to me hoping we can have a life together, which we can't. And I don't want it anyway, because he's a lying user. When I get back, I take a long shower, listening to the news as I scrub my face. In about an hour's time, the Prime Minister will be giving a press conference to answer questions about the upcoming referendum.
Grrr.
I reach out of the shower and shut off the radio, hoping to never hear about anything to do with Arthur ever again. I scrub my face, putting my full attention to maintaining a youthful, childlike glow. I miss the innocence of childhood. If only I could be 10 again, with nothing more to worry about than how I was going to do in my upcoming spelling test. I'd do very well, by the way. Spelling was my thing. My mind wanders to Tabitha's class tour, and how sweet Arthur was with the kids. Oh, now my brain is just torturing me. I think of Tabitha asking about what would happen if the king doesn't call the election. And then it hits me, all in one fell swoop. I know what the Prime Minister is planning. And I know what I have to do to stop him. I grab my phone and call Nikki. I need your help. I have to get to the Parliament building right away.
38. Latin faux pas. And donuts causing delays. Arthur. It's a day before the big vote. I am slumped in an armchair in the gold drawing room with Grandmum, watching the news. Even though it's just after lunch, I'm already exhausted from the past several weeks of campaigning. The Prime Minister is about to make a speech giving people the many reasons to oust us. And as soon as it's over, I'll put my cheesy politician face back on and resume my final 24 hours of butt-smooching.
"Have you called her yet?"
Grandmum asks, obviously trying to sound casual. "No, and I'm not going to. She made it very clear that she doesn't want a life with me. So if you don't mind, I think I'll salvage what's left of my pride."
"She'd change her mind if she knew you were the one to take care of that lawsuit for her."
"No, she wouldn't. And I'm not sure that I'd want her to anyway."
"Then why did you do it?"
"Because they made a faulty product, then tried to blame someone else for the fact that it failed." Grandmum puts down her tea and gives me the one eyebrow.
"Arthur?"
"What?" I turn back to the television, where the Prime Minister is on the steps of the Parliament building in front of a podium. He opens his mealy mouth and speaks. "Good morning. We, the people of Avonia, have reached the eve of a landmark event. For the first time in 800 years, we have the power to take back our country from the family who swooped in and stole it so long ago. We no longer have to be beholden to the Langdons. No longer have to pay them reverence with our hard-earned tax money. We can simply say no."
"Arthur, you're an idiot if you're going to let your pride get in the way of a life with the woman you want."
"I'm trying to listen to this." I point to the television.
"Who cares what that wanker has to say? I'm talking about love."
Sighing, I turn to her. "Listen, it wasn't love. It was lust at best. And even if it was love, and even if it turned out that she wasn't just using me to get a job with... I point to the television. That wanker. I'd never want her to spend the rest of her days suffering in this family. With this. I waved my hand around in the air. So-called life.
You know, I just realized you're either a chauvinist or a coward. But I can't decide which.
What? I scowled at her.
You heard me. You either think you are entitled to make her decisions for her, which would make you a chauvinist, or you're too scared to go to her and put your heart on the line, in which case you are a coward. Very disappointing, either way.
That's ridiculous. I jump off the chair and walk to the window. She's the coward. The first sign of trouble, she ran. She's not strong enough to do this. It would break her, like it did to my mother and Arabella. So it's better that she's already gone. And then, the most remarkable thing happens. I hear a familiar voice coming from the telly.
Tessa Sharp, concerned citizen. Prime Minister Jansen, currently our constitution requires the reigning monarch to call federal elections.
I rush over to the television, and there she is, looking very nervous and absolutely lovely in a crisp white dress shirt. She has no microphone, so she has to practically shout to be heard.
You've made no move to change the constitution, which means that if the people vote to abolish the monarchy, you could legally install yourself as an ipso facto dictator.
Wince. Not ipso facto, Tessa. De facto, I say to the screen. Titters are heard from the crowd, and I watch as a young woman with blue and purple hair whispers in her ear. Tessa turns bright pink, then says,
De facto. I meant de facto ruler.
The slime minister does a poor job of hiding his amusement.
I have no intention of installing myself as dictator, ipso facto or otherwise. Next question.
Tessa's voice calls out again. This time, her tone says, Don't mess with me.
I'm not finished with my question, sir. Why haven't you put forth a bill to have the proper changes to our election policy go into immediate effect should the monarchy be defeated?
Jack rolls his eyes, but underneath the irritation, he's afraid. I can smell it from here.
This is irrelevant, and quite frankly, none of us have time for it. Why don't you go back to reviewing fitness equipment, sweetheart?
A low ooh murmurs through the crowd. The camera zooms in on Tessa, who now has a game face on. Shoulders back, chin up, jaw set. Yes, I've seen that look before. He's in for it now, I say. Tessa continues.
Do you recall a conversation you had with me on March 20th, in which you stated, It's not right that our rulers are chosen simply by falling out of the right vagina?
The camera shifts to Jack's face again. His eyes are dead cold.
Ridiculous. Next question, please.
He looks around and points.
Giles, you're up. Let's make it important, please. After all, we are on the eve of a momentous referendum. I'd like you to answer a first question, sir. Why haven't you put a bill forward that would provide the people with the assurance they need?
The Prime Minister scoffs and shakes his head.
This is insanity. Does anyone have something else for me?
A female reporter speaks up.
I do. Did you really say that comment about choosing our rulers simply by falling out of the right vagina?
Of course not. I would never say something so crass and insulting.
Tessa speaks up again.
But you did, sir. You said it to me at the christening of the ANS Viceroy. You then went on to say that if anyone is going to be a ruler until he dies, it should be someone the people elected in the first place. Are you intending to install yourself as a de facto ruler? It's a yes or no question.
That's my girl. I'm not dignifying that with an answer. Unless anyone has anything else to ask, we're done here.
I turn to my grandmother. I've got to go. Spinning on my heel, I rush over to her, kiss her on the forehead, and hurry out of the room. As I'm on my way, I hear her say,
Finally! Go get her, Arthur!
One of the greatest things about the city of Valcourt is our exceptional traffic flow. Somehow, the city engineers of our nation have found a way to minimize delays, allowing a steady, smooth stream along every motorway. Unless it happens to be opening day of the first ever Krispy Kreme in Avonia. Then, apparently, traffic slows to the pace of an ancient wheelchair-bound poodle. I tap my fingers on the seat arm as we sit, waiting for people to get their donut fix. "Come on, come on," I mutter. Ollie, who is sitting next to me, says, "If I had a shop with the likes of her, I'd be making a run for it." I glare for a second, feeling an unexpected surge of Neanderthal anger, but it doesn't faze Ollie, who says, "Relax. I'm just saying, it's about bloody time." I undo my seatbelt and open the door. "Agreed." With that, I zig and zag my way through the vehicles, making my way to the sidewalk and sprint up the road that leads to Parliament Hill, my tie flying over my shoulder, the hot wind in my hair, the nerves in my gut tying themselves in knots. There's absolutely no logic to what I'm doing, or to the fact that I feel that if I don't get there before the press conference ends, it'll somehow be too late. But I do, and I can't let that happen, because if it's too late with her, I'll never be happy again a day in my life. My mind races as fast as my legs. What do I say when I see her? God, I didn't think this through. "You complete me?" "No, overuse. You're tough enough to be my queen?" Horrid. Shit. What the fuck do I say? I turn and sprint up the long lawn that leads to the Parliament buildings. The reporters are packing up, and I spot her in the parking lot, getting into the Citroen for the video. "Tessa!" I call, but she doesn't hear me. She gets in, and before I can make it to her, she's gone.
39. Truly, madly, completely. Tessa. Oh my God, I'm such an idiot. I hide my face in my hands. Stop that. You are the only one in the entire country to even think of asking him about why he hasn't put forth that bill. You're brilliant. Nikki pulls out onto the road and turns toward home. Look at all the cars going to Krispy Kreme. I wonder how long it would take for us to get a box of donuts. Quit trying to distract me. I'm busy being a loser. I turn to her and lean my head against the seat rest. Ipso facto. Easy mistake. Anyone can make that mistake. She cranes her neck to the right. How long will it take before the lineup dies down? Months. It took like 6 months for the lines to die down in Scotland. I sigh, glad that we're heading in the opposite direction of the throngs of vehicles. But seriously, why do I always have to be the one to publicly humiliate myself? Because you're brave enough to put yourself out there. Most people are total wimps, but your desire to do the right thing is stronger than your desire to not look like a total arse. That's what makes you so great. No, that's what makes me a total arse. Most people see the wrong in the world and they do nothing about it, Tess. Nothing. You have courage and you're tough as gel nails. You didn't shrink in front of that rat bastard when most people would. You're kind of my hero. Thanks. I blink back tears. My cell buzzes in my purse. I reach down and pick it up, seeing two texts. Awesome. Text from Bram. Ipso facto. Oh, Christ, you certainly know how to keep the country entertained. Text from Lars. Good God, how is it that we are related? Nice try, though. I could see where you were going with that. Nina was thrilled that you tried to help the royal family. The ringer sounds, and my mum's face appears on the screen. I groan and answer. Hi, Mum. Tessa, she shouts into the phone. We watched your news conference. Well done, you. Although I do think you really should stick to writing, my darling. It just goes better for you when you have time to check all your words over. Thanks, Mum. I have to go. I'm just with Nikki. She's driving and I don't want to distract her. Oh, you're with her. Perfect. Then you don't need to take the bus to get home. I'm not on my way home, actually. Of course you are, Twinkle. Remember, it's a school holiday and you said you'd help Dad watch the grandkids while I go get my hair coloured. Bring Nikki. We haven't seen her in ages. Grr. I'll see if she can drive me. I ring off and toss my phone back in my purse. Need a ride so you can help your dad babysit. You heard all that? How could I not? She asks. Do you want me to take you there? Or do you need an excuse? I could run out of gas if you like. No, I should go. I've promised myself I'm going to stop avoiding things I don't want to deal with, remember? The new and improved Tessa. Exactly, I groan. Not that it won't be just dreadful when my brothers arrive to pick up the kids. You're invited, by the way. Do you think your mum'll have made a batch of lemon custard tarts? 12 minutes. That's how long it takes to get from downtown Valcourt to Abbott Lane in a car driven by Danica Patrick, a.k.a. Nikki, when lemon custard tarts are waiting. Not exactly a nice man in a hybrid with heated leather seats, but it was fast. My clothes are mud-free, and it's really hot out today, so I don't actually need my tush warmed for me. Take what you can get, right? When we pull up, my dad is in the front garden with the kids, most of whom are drawing on the sidewalk with chalk, while the twins are racing down the sidewalk on the scooters Arthur bought them, which honestly guts me, even though I tell myself it doesn't. My dad is sipping beer and admiring his peonies that are in full bloom. He turns, looking delighted to see me as I unfold myself from the tiny car. There's my girl! Well done, you! He reaches out and gives me a huge bear hug, and I laugh, feeling like a little kid, just like I always do when he hugs me. It's kind of nice to be home, even if my brothers will take the piss out of me when they get here. Fuck 'em. Thanks, Dad. The screeching of tyres down the road interrupts the moment. A black SUV with red and yellow flags comes barreling down the street. Slow down, you wanker! My dad shouts, letting go of me and stepping off the curb with his hand out. The car comes to a quick halt. Oh, bugger, Dad. I think that's the royal family. I don't give a dead rat's ass who it is. I'm not going to stand here and watch them hit one of my grandkids. The kids are safely on the sidewalk, mind you, and now they're snickering and repeating the phrase, dead rat's ass. He's going to hear about that later. The back door swings open and Arthur gets out. He glances at my father. Sorry about that, sir. We've been chasing your daughter all the way from Parliament Hill. He looks at Nikki. You're very fast. She gives him a come-hither look. I certainly am. I clear my throat and she jumps a little. Sorry, that was purely reflex. Won't happen again, she murmurs. Then Arthur's eyes land on me. I fix him with a look of steel. Shouldn't you be out campaigning? I should be. He takes 2 steps toward me. But the thing is, I don't give a goddamn if we win or lose. He glances at the children, who are giggling. Sorry, kids. He should never swear. Not very regal behaviour. He turns back to me and swallows, his face filled with worry. I've come to the realisation that none of it matters if I won't have you by my side for the next 60 years or so. Nope. You do not get to say that. What we had wasn't real. It was all just a bunch of lies. Sipping wine at sunset. And the jelly babies. And the world is spinning too fast thing? Yeah, you probably thought I wouldn't have figured that out, but I've spent the past few weeks going over every conversation we had and comparing it to my old dating profile, so I know exactly which parts were bullshit. Sorry, kids. All right, you got me. At the beginning, I did use ill-gotten information to try to persuade you to like me. But I stopped as soon as I really got to see the woman underneath this tough girl mask you wear all the time. Just stop. I can't, Arthur. It's over and we both have to accept that. No, we bloody well don't. We may have started out on the wrong foot, and we may have taken too long to trust each other, but what we felt for each other was real. Very real. More real than anything I've felt in my life. I shake my head and shut my eyes tightly, so I don't have to look at his gorgeous face. You were just using me, and I was using you. And even if we weren't, we still can't be together, because I'll just ruin you.
bollocks. You're the only one who can save me. Didn't you see me at the press conference? I was a disaster. I'm always a disaster. I'm not the right woman for you. I'll be the judge of that, thank you. Another vehicle rounds the corner. This time it's a fast-approaching news van. I watch in shock as my father steps out into the middle of the road and holds his arms out to stop them. What the hell is going on today? Giles Bigley jumps out, along with a cameraman. Ollie positions himself next to my father and holds up his hands as well. Please keep a respectful distance. This is a private matter. The man hurries over to the sidewalk and aims the camera at us, but doesn't dare step past Ollie. This is why, I point to the news crew. I'm not cut out for any of it. You need to marry someone sophisticated and accomplished and regal. Not someone who's likely to step in horse shit getting out of the carriage and come reeking down the aisle at the Abbey. His face grows serious as he closes the distance between us. No, you're probably right. It would probably be an unmitigated disaster. Comedic fodder for talk shows for years to come. I give him a big nod, trying to ignore how my heart has just sunk to my feet. Exactly. Now, I appreciate the whole romantic chasing me through town, very flattering, but I think we both know we should just say goodbye now so we can each start the lives we're meant to lead. Nope. Nope. I purse my lips together. You heard me. Nope. I chased you through town for a reason. The life I'm meant to lead is with you, crown or no crown. You're my purpose, Tessa. My eyes fill with tears. Oh, pucker. You're not going to make it very easy to walk away, are you? Arthur smiles, his face full of emotion. In case you couldn't tell, I'm trying to make it impossible for you to walk away. He reaches up and holds my cheeks in his hands. The feeling of his skin on mine cracks open my hardened heart, spilling molten lava of love all through my body. I know it's cheesy, but it's true. He smiles down at me. Because the thing is, if I'm going to marry anyone, it's going to be you. Broken, horseshit-covered heels and all. There's no other woman on this planet I want to watch limping her way up the aisle toward me. I never thought I'd find someone I would love, truly, madly, completely like this. But I did. I found you, and you're the only woman who can keep me from turning into a completely arrogant disaster. I need you, Tessa, and I don't need anyone. More than that, I love you with every beat of my foolish heart. And if all of that doesn't convince you, you need to know I have a cupboard filled with bags of crisps back at the palace. I laugh through my tears and reach up and put my hands over his. You really should have led with that. Would that have saved me some time in getting to kiss you again? He grins and lowers his mouth over mine. Definitely. Damn. He closes the distance between our mouths and kisses me deeply, waking every ounce of hope and love and lust that I tried to bury away. He wraps his arms around my waist and lifts me up off my feet, our lips staying locked together through the jeers and cheers of my nieces and nephews, through the loud throat-clearing of my father, through Ollie firmly reminding us there are cameras filming us, through Nicky telling him to mind his own damn business. None of that matters, because it's really just Arthur and me now, and with any luck, forever.
40. Pole predicting better fish. Arthur. It's late on Friday night. The past 30 hours have been both the most terrifying and wonderful of my life. Case in point, the press conference I held last night to make a final plea on behalf of my family. Terrifying, but also wonderful, because Tessa stood next to me, holding my hand through the entire thing, and the press loved it. They got all caught up in asking questions about our relationship and seemed to forget about the vote, for a few minutes anyway. Wonderful, when Tessa realized I was the one who put a grinding halt to the lawsuit from those horrid shock jogger people. She was really, really, really grateful, if you get my drift, especially since she found out how I settled the case. Instead of paying them out, I've agreed to shoot a video for them, testing out the product myself. But don't worry about me. I'm a seasoned runner, and I'm sure I'll manage without getting zapped. And now, it's just the two of us snuggled up on the couch in my room, watching the polls come in. Well, actually four, if you count Dex and Chester. My grandmother sat with us for the first 4 hours, then went to bed after saying she had no doubt in her mind that we'd win. After all, we've given the people the very real possibility of a royal wedding, and there is nothing more irresistible. Arabella has flown to Turkey with some friends to go to a spa and have her nails done, rather than sit around chewing them off like the rest of us. My father has gone to our castle on the North Shore, but don't feel bad for him. He's not so alone. Dexter is curled up on the other side of Tessa, with his snout on her lap, staring up at her. "Look at him! He's an absolutely smitten pig," I say. She gives me a wicked grin.
"Just like his owner."
I laugh, and kiss her hard on the mouth. Grateful she's here during what would have been, without a doubt, the most stressful night of my life. If it weren't for her, I'd be stinking drunk by now. But she's here, and I'm not, because win or lose, I'll have a reason to go on. The polls are far too close for me to feel at all relaxed, though. We're up by less than 2%, but the Western Province still hasn't completed their count. The experts on A, B, and C are predicting a win for us. But unless they have time machines, I'm not going to trust that they know any more than Chester the Better Fish, who is fast asleep on his ridiculous little fish hammock. Chester has decided to move in with me, since he doesn't like Finn's stinky bedroom, and Tessa will be spending much of her time here anyway. She can't officially move in, not without creating quite the scandal, which, for the moment, we would like to avoid. Veronica Platt wraps up an interview with one of the polling experts. Then footage of me and Tessa reuniting comes onto the screen again. "Oh, look, pumpkin," I say, and I don't even hate myself for saying it. There we are, declaring our love for each other.
"It's right there on the national news. This is going to be quite the life, isn't it?"
she asks, shaking her head a little. "Yes, but I have no doubt you can handle it." I kiss her on the forehead. "Thank God your parents raised you with four horrible brothers."
"Thank God for that."
An hour later, we hurry to my grandmother's room and knock gently on the door. When she doesn't answer, I open it, and we walk in and are greeted by the sound of her snoring.
"Maybe we should just let her sleep," Tessa whispers.
I shake my head. "No, she'll want to know."
"Know what?" she croaks.
I walk over to her bed and hold a glass of champagne out to her. "That we won!" She opens one eye.
"Your girlfriend was right. Not worth waking me for."
Rolling over onto her side, she says,
"You really need to trust her judgment if you're going to be king some day. She's much smarter than you."
Epilogue. Autotune the Prince. Arthur.
"Oh, darling, it's not that bad."
Tessa kisses me on the cheek as a video plays on a parent's telly. Issa has cleared the room of children by sending them out to the garden with popsicles and is happily getting a revenge on me for the whole come-out-little-baby mistake. I watch from the back of the room with my arms folded across my chest. Finn grins back at me every few seconds, proud to be the first to show the family the auto-tuned version of the damn video. On the screen, my entire body folds up on itself, and I shout, "Fuckity fucking hell!" I glance at Tessa's mum, who is the only one not laughing.
"It's not funny at all, is it?"
"Thank you, Evie. Glad somebody gets it. Even Tessa's laughing so hard, she's crying. But she, at least, has the sense to apologize between bouts of giggles."
"It was rather painful, actually. I feel like I should sue them."
The shock jogger people
wanted to shoot the video live, going for massive exposure over the safety of being able to splice out any problems. No wonder Welbitz is going under. Until that moment, right there, I point to the screen, I couldn't for the life of me figure out that whole not-my-hair business. Tessa stops laughing and turns to me. Feels like it'll all fall out, right? Exactly. I smile down at her, glad to have her to commiserate with. I once read about a woman who got shocked so hard, all her hair fell out.
Weekly World News?
She asks, setting her attention on the screen again. Probably fake, right?
Probably.
Although they were right about that man who had a baby. When the video ends, Tessa turns to me, clearly holding in another bout of laughter.
My knight in shining armor.
Oh, stop it. She wraps her arms around me.
No, you are. You did that to save me.
And you'd think you would be a little more sympathetic to me for that very reason.
I'm sorry, Arthur. It's just so fucking funny.
She kisses me on the lips, and I find my bruised ego being soothed, but just a smidge. Reaching up on her tiptoes, she whispers in my ear.
I promise I'll make it up to you later.
Totally worth it. This concludes The Royal Treatment by Melanie Summers, narrated by Tom Bromhead and Shiromi Arserio. Copyright 2017 by Gretz Corporation. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Melanie Summers, care of Cook International, working in conjunction with Cook McDermott, and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media, Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.